This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
All right, everybody, this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast. My name is Dan Johnson, and sitting digitally across from me, Mr. Jason. Is it Mr. Jason today or just Jason?
No, it's just Jason today.
Yeah.
Usually, we're in about 10 different spots today, so.
Okay. Usually I can tell if you're wearing a hat on the show, then there's no Mr. Jason. It's just Jason. Cool.
Yep. A hat, a collared shirt normally. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Dude, it's March.
Yeah.
This is crazy. This is a fun time of year. I've just been doing a lot of driving between wrestling, going places for wrestling. There's no snow on the ground and all of the grass is still flat. From the last snowstorm we had, there's no growth yet. Yep. And dude, my mind every time I'm driving down the road is get out and start walking, buffer strips and things like that.
So did you see the video I emailed you, the Shed Hunt video?
I did not because it won't open. And I need to talk to you about that after the episode.
Okay. But, well, so that's kind of where I was the same thing. I was seeing all this matted grass and stuff. And I thought, man, I'm going to get out in the open prairie. And, you know, I found one that had been sitting there for probably a year, you know, because it wasn't chewed on or anything. You'd just see the discoloration in it, but still pretty cool. So,
So this weekend is state tournament for my, my daughter. And then the following weekend, God, I always feel like if I go the second week, if I find any, they're going to be chewed up. You know what I mean? Like it's too late or someone else has walked the property. I'm going to be looking for antlers that are gone. You know what I mean? Just like they're not there. And maybe they show up. Maybe another group of people shows up to shed hunt it. Maybe they don't. But I just feel like it's always too late if I go, but I also am going the following week because I have my knee surgery in like in 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to move some tree stands before I get my knee surgery. That way, all I have to do is throw some mineral out in July and put my trail cameras back up. And then after that, I just have to show up to hunt. That's the goal anyway. That's the goal.
Yep. No, that's a kind of what my, I went out last, it was Friday. It was Friday. Cause I thought I had a tick of the flu bug and so I laid around for a little while and then I went out Friday and I did some scouting too, not just shed hunting. And the neighbor of this property across the road, become friends with the last couple of years. And we were texting back and forth and he says, you got you good for next weekend to come out. And he was going to let me on some of his property. He's got thousands of acres, you know, and I'm like, man, I'd love to go, but we got tumbling competition all weekend. So we're gone, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking the same thing you just said, like I'm going to get in there. They're going to be gone. They're going to be chewed up. They're going to be, which is, I know these deer are there during the winter. So I'd love to get in there, but maybe I can get out this week, but it looks like we're going to get wet here for most part of the week.
Yeah. And for me, dude, rain all you want. That's what I'm saying. It's like rain all you want until about 2 days before. So it's dry enough for me to get out there, but rain this weekend, the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And that way it's going to prevent people from going out shed hunting.
Yep.
And I know a lot of hardcore guys, but I don't know many guys who like skip work to go shed hunting. They'll pop out maybe after work for a couple hours or maybe try to get out on a weekend, but they're not going crazy about it. So, I don't know. And plus, dude, you know how dry we are right now?
Oh,
it's ridiculous.
a lot of the creeks that I was crossing and stuff that would generally have water, I just walked straight across them, you know, mm-hmm. So we definitely need the moisture.
Yeah. They said, I think we had a total of 14 inches in November, 7 inches in December, and 4 inches of snow in January. And I don't even, like, in February, I don't even know what we got here in Iowa on the average. And it's not, we're like 20 some inches below precipitation for this winter. Yeah. And that's not good leading into the spring.
No. I mean, it makes it easier as far as putting in food plots and stuff, you know, because it's going to be drier, but you actually want some moisture to soften the ground too. So I don't know. I'm hoping that we get the rain this week, and I'm hoping for my work wise, we stay warmer temperature wise and get the road postings lifted, but it is what it is. It's spring, it's Mother Nature. And, one thing real quick, I was with the scouting and stuff, we can kind of jump into our commercial with Code Blue Sense. And I was looking at some of these scrapes, and with the rope kits, I've narrowed down like maybe something that would be beneficial for people. And I put a couple little clips together, and I'm going to go through them and I'll send them to you later. But so Code Blue Sense, guys, check out all their full line of synthetic, you know, urines, but they also have a full line of detergents and sprays to keep yourself clean and not, I guess, you know, deodorized as far as you can. Yep. But the rope kits that I've been using, man, I started using the lure, the rack rub, well before I even bought the rope kit itself. And man, these scrapes are in awesome spots, but I found that when I use them, it's actually pinching them down into certain areas to where I could eliminate some overhanging branches. So that's what kind of wanted to go into. But yeah, check out Code Blue Sense and discount code HTH20 for 20% off.
Eliminate some overhanging branches. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, you know, on a lot of field edges, you know, if farmer's not trimming his edges and stuff up so he can get it, he's got a lot of overhanging branches that are coming into the field. And what happens is I was walking a point, a finger down into a drainage, basically off of a buffer strip. And once I got to that point, it was like the scrapes just opened up, and it was like, you know, you'd find a 2 foot scrape, a 2 foot scrape, a 3 foot scrape. And then all of a sudden there'd be a giant like hub scrape. And then off of those hub scrapes, you know, it was just like trails going everywhere. And then you'd go a little bit further and there'd be another 2 foot scrape, 2 foot scrape. And then you could just tell that maybe a tree was rubbed on, or maybe an overhanging branch was snapped off. So what I found on the east side of this farm, I had already eliminated a bunch of these overhanging branches, and I isolated where I wanted the rope. And I did this years ago, and basically they hit just that scrape every single time. And not versus on the west side of the farm, there's probably, I mean, 10 to 20 scrapes that come down, but they will make their own scrapes too. And you can also use the rope kit in a pre-existing scrape. And I think sometimes that actually could be even more beneficial than trying to make a mock scrape in a place that you choose.
Right. Dude, I'm telling you, I had a farm that I used to hunt. This would have been, oh man, 7 years ago. And I got access to it, and the landowner didn't hunt. I mean, they hunted the gun season, but I was a bow hunter, so I was a non-threat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was next to a major farm of a major hunting personality. And so I got the benefit of like the crossover, right?
Right.
And so I walk into this property, and every single overhanging branch in these fields had a scrape underneath of it. Yeah. Everyone.
Yeah.
Then the next year they came through and they did some work to get, so tractors could get back there easily, to the backfields. And they like removed a lot of trees in the fence rows, except a couple. Mm-hmm. And I went back that next year, and I was sitting in a tree, and I was watching this, like, I guess you would call it a two track or a tractor crossing. And there was only one overhanging branch, and every single deer that walked by there hit that scrape, doe or buck. And because it was the only option in the area now.
Yeah.
And so it's important, dude. You can manipulate a lot of things with scent.
Well, and I sent you a picture last week too of that doe that just got in there, and she was just rubbing that rope. And I mean, we're you know, the end of February when I send you that picture. So I mean, it does work year round too with it. And I think what I figured out with it, with doing the east side of this farm the way I did, I was already narrowing down where they would scrape at, you know, which could put me into shooting distance of that scrape if I wanted to, or at least monitor their come and go from it. But now looking at the western side of it, man, it was hard to pinpoint like exactly where I wanted to be, but there was one focal point that they led to, and that was a completely different spot. But that scrape that I found was 10 yards from where I shot my buck this past fall. You know, it's like all those scrapes led to that, but when I would sit on the eastern side and I would watch over to the western side, watch the deer movement, they would sporadically go through the timber, the finger of that. It wasn't like they were hitting just one area. So I feel like if I can take and manipulate that edge and cut those branches down or up, you know, even higher to where there's only one or two, maybe, I think you can kind of isolate their travel too.
Right. And then you pair that with a trail camera.
Right.
And it's going to tell you a lot about whatever's moving through that field edge.
Yeah. One question I was thinking when you were talking there and you said something about, you know, you were no harm because you were a bow hunter versus the gun hunters on this property. So it just kind of dawned on me. What is more intrusive, a gun hunter or a bow hunter?
Well, that was 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And they were a gun hunter and they were, you know, they're gun hunters and gun hunters, especially almost like, when I first started going out west and I told people I was a bow hunter, they would be like, good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not killing shit unless it's a rifle. And I felt like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
But even back in the day, before bow hunting took off and before bow hunting was the industry and the popularity that it was, man, you could get access in really good farms by telling people, I don't want to gun hunt. I just want to bow hunt. And then they would laugh at you because they would be like, bow hunters. Yeah, go for it, buddy. He's not a threat to me. At least I can say I let someone on my property.
Yeah.
But I guess,
my question was kind of like, as far as like a scouting aspect, you know, or being aggressive aspect, you know, a bow hunter is probably going to cover a lot more ground, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a fair assumption because a gun hunter is going to shoot from afar. So, I mean, they can glass from afar. They can easily creep up to an edge and just watch a field. You know, they don't have to be in a certain tree or whatever. And I guess that's where, you know, if we're talking about like hunting pressure, a bow hunter probably puts more hunting pressure on a property than a gun hunter does. Right. Is that safe to say?
I'm guessing throughout the course of a year, yes. But in Iowa, the farms that I hunt on, they do deer drives.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the ultimate pressure, right?
Yeah.
Just pushing deer everywhere. Yep. And so I guess let's just compare maybe a muzzleloader. My assumption is that muzzleloader guys don't do deer drives.
Right.
And so they just sit and they wait. And so I'm just sitting here trying to figure out, you know, where a guy is in the muzzleloader season, as opposed to the farms that I hunt, once shotgun season hits and they start doing their deer drives, late season and on that particular farm, it's over.
Yeah. Dude,
there's no point in going back to that farm late season because number one, there's not a lot of deer. And number two, if it's good weather, they've driven that farm 100 times and they don't go out and scout throughout the year. Like I do, like I go out and I shed hunt.
Right.
And I go out and I hang my trail cameras and I do a little scouting looking for this year's hot spot, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I feel like, bow hunters take it a little more serious. That's just a guess.
Yeah.
Bow hunters take it more serious. Therefore, they want to get closer and they're going to be boots on the ground more on their farms and in public property looking for the best spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple things that I kind of noticed this past week too was, so on Friday I hit two different properties And I walked like about 6 miles. So yeah. It was pretty even between the two of them. But the one property is about 50 acres and the other property is about 435 acres.
Yeah.
And so I moved a little bit quicker through the 435 acres, but I only hunted it a couple times this past fall because the sign wasn't there.
Right.
Now, however, I did find a hot spot on that property. Now, I'm going to go back to last spring when, you know, we did this hunting small properties segment and yep. How I've gravitated towards that as a hunter. I find that me personally, I am struggling with these bigger pieces as far as isolating that deer movement and pinpointing travel and everything. Do you have like a level of which you could speak on that as far as how you dissect something, say 400 acres or more?
You can't do it in a year. I honestly don't think.
I've had this property 9 years.
Yeah. And you know, just, okay, so the farm that I hunt, I will have hunted it, my main farm, 20 years, okay? Mm-hmm. The first time I ever stepped foot on it was 2006 during the turkey season, and then I was able to hunt it with a bow the first time in 2027, okay? So it's the total acreage on this one farm is 480. All right. Lays out kind of funky.
Yeah.
But you can't do it in a year. You can't hunt the whole farm. I mean, you can litter it with trail cameras. And how many trail cameras do I have on it? One, two. I'll tell you the year I had the most trail cameras on it. One, two, three, four, five, six. Seven, eight, nine. I had nine trail cameras over 480 acres. Yeah. They didn't tell me too much, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because I mean, you're not even at 1 to 50 acres, basically.
Right, right. It didn't tell me too much. I got good enough deer on trail camera to where I was able to go out and start, you know, patterning some mature bucks. But they come through and log it somewhere around 2014.
Yep.
Now you have a completely different environment.
Yep.
Right? The treetops are in there. They create a different type of habitat. It's opened up the canopy, so now there's more light down in there. So now there's areas that are thicker. And so now we have just a completely different environment. The deer are moving through it differently. And so it's like every year I have to go in, or I used to go in and walk the whole property, shed hunt the whole thing. And now I just don't do that anymore. Just because of time.
Right.
But outside of that, I'm just like, I just take it a little bit at a time. I know what the terrain is telling me. I know what the, I have historical data. I think the travel corridors stay the same, but the bedding changes when you do that. So,
Yeah, I don't know. I've had a problem with hunting this property, and I don't know if it's because it's not like a big solid block of timber, you know, but it's got draws and it's got, you know, buffer strips, and it's broke up into, you know, basically the north side of the farm is corn this year, it's beans this year, and then they rotate opposite. So a lot of it looks like there's pressure from the west and the north, and then there's a roadside on the east, and then the south side is well manicured and they hunt and everything. So that, you know, there's pressure, but they also have a good food source. So it's just been a difficult thing. But back to what you were saying about logging, it must have been the third year I was hunting this property, he logged his property, which changed the dynamics of that was their bedding right along the south border. And then they changed the entrance to their property and a lot of things changed with it. But man, I've struggled with this piece more than I've ever struggled a fence line or a small piece. And I don't know. Maybe I'm hunting just the perfect small pieces. I don't know.
Yeah. And here's the thing. When I used to overthink everything. I used to get extremely frustrated. But here is the basics. Like, we call this the How to Hunt Deer podcast, right?
Right.
Trails do not lie. They are the absolute roadmap. And a trail can tell you a lot, right? I can walk onto any farm in the United States and I can see a deer trail, plain as day, if they're using it over and over and over again. And historically, They are. I mean, right now you can go see where the deer are crossing roads. It's the soil is a little moist, so you can see them where they jump the fence a lot, and you can go in and you can find these dead set trails.
Yeah.
The trails are still going to be there in the fall.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Or in the late summer. And if you're confused of where you should set up, step number one, find a trail.
Yeah.
Set up within shooting range of a trail with your wind blowing away from the trail.
Right.
That's like deer hunting 101. Okay. And assume that they're coming from the timber or from the thick stuff to a destination food source. Whether that's an wide open oak flat, whether that's, an ag field or a food plot. Mornings, try to find a different way in and hunt that same trail with them coming back into it. So that's the basics of it. And so anytime I ever get lost or confused of where I should go, and I'm trying to locate a doe group or a big buck, I am going back to the basics of just finding a popular trail.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Well, and if you use your mapping devices too, I mean, right now, if you're looking at a map from a winter time frame, that map will show you trails if you zoom in on it. I mean, even out west, you know, we've looked at, you know, a winter map when they took the pictures over winter and the vegetation's down and everything, you can see all these trails that these deer use. So that's one thing that I've done in the past. If I don't have the time to get on a property to identify maybe at least a spot to try to sit or scout if I have, you know, an opportunity, but no, it's just been something I was thinking about. Cause I covered a lot of ground quick, you know, but, and I narrowed down that farm to basically going back 9 years where I thought the best deer movement on that farm was, but now figuring out like they use other pieces of this property, you know, how to make a A, B, and C on this property, like what I prioritize and what I make, you know, my go-to spot, you know, where do I spend my week rut hunt at?
Yeah. Yeah. And the way I look at that is I feel like where I'm spending, that's what I'm doing, not this weekend, but next weekend, right?
Yeah.
Is I'm moving I'm micromanaging my tree stand locations. One, I'm literally moving 10 yards.
Yeah.
That's it. Because there's a row of trees that I can't shoot through. And so yeah. I'm moving my tree stand into that row of trees. I'm still going to be able to shoot the creek crossing that's there. I'm going to be able to shoot this little other area behind me. But then I'm going to be catching a ton of deer movement that I couldn't catch previously. Yeah. So I'm going to be doing that. And then what the goal is micromanaging all of those to put them into very hot travel corridors during the rut.
Yeah.
Cause there is some places that I missed this year that I should have moved, but because of my knee, I didn't. So now before my knee surgery, I'm going to move them and hopefully just walk into the farm and hunt. Now, every single year I have to make minor adjustments though.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Well, and I think that's what I was getting at too, is like, yeah. I have stands, pre-hung stands on this property, and I could hunt, I don't know, there's probably one for every 25 to 50 acres on this property, but
right.
like focal point wise, like I don't have stands where I really feel like they should be, you know, I need right. to make some adjustments. So I need a day of doing the same thing, pulling some stands down, moving them, because as we see with kids and with life and work and everything, you don't have the time to necessarily run and gun at our age as you used to maybe.
Yeah. Well, I still run and gun, but I would rather not run and gun, you know, like 45 years old, bad knees, bad shoulder. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it. But if I can put in 2 days, like I'm going to go on a Friday, I'm going to spend the night, come back to the farm the next morning. We're all going to do like a big shed hunt. I'm going to let the boys go crazy.
Yeah.
My boy is probably going to bring a friend, my oldest boy. And I'm just going to say, go wherever you want.
Right.
Don't cross any fences, go wherever you want. And, you can go look for shed antlers, stay away from the pond. And then I'm going to go do my stuff and then let them go have their fun. And then we'll walk the farm together looking for antlers. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a great idea. I mean, I wish I had more time to be able to do it, you know, because with all the kids, they love shed hunting. And normally we try to get out at least once or twice, all of us, all seven of us will go and we'll do it. But this year, I mean, you know, she's already that far pregnant and everything. I don't know that she's going to walk that far. And we're not taking our trip to Iowa that we normally do. We're not going to do that this year. So there's a lot of things there. But there was something I was thinking about when we were talking about the stands and everything. Oh, so we were moving stuff around out in one of the barns this past weekend. And when we're moving stuff around, all my hunting stuff and decoys had to get moved to a different area. And I stumbled upon the one of the ears for my doe decoy. And it just took me back to this past fall, talking about this run and gun style of hunting. Mm-hmm. That's what I had to do to make this happen. You know, I was run and gun hunting. I was two decoys. I was dragging them both in the sled, and I had one day that basically I made everything work that day, and everything happened to work for me too. So it still does happen, but convenience and luxury wise, man, I'd much rather just go find my perch and sit and relax at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. I mean, it's all about time really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, time is what makes people successful.
Right.
Whether it is time put into food plots or time put into scouting or time put into actually hunting, right? You know, there's some kind of bell curve or some kind of triangle. Like you could have time and days off versus, I don't know, like time spent in the spring versus time or scouting in March versus time in the hunting or throughout the fall. But what I'm getting at there is, you can be successful without scouting if you put a ton of work into, like hunting, right? Like I know guys, it kind of in, your line of work where he's on a construction crew for a road crew, and he works probably starting in March and he won't stop until October, and then they lay him off, mid-October, because that's usually when the weather gets bad. So he'll be working his 80 hours a week on a road crew all spring, all summer, all through September. And then October hits, they lay him off and he is gone.
Yeah.
right? He hunts every single day of October. He hunts every single day of November. He hunts the gun season and he just goes. And so that's where he finds his success, because he's able to scour the hunting season.
Yeah.
I know other guys who they get their 4, 5, 6 days a week off or a year off. And so their time is spent in the spring, like a day here, a day there, going out scouting, looking for terrain on public. Then there's the other guys. They don't scout at all, but they plant food plots and they do habitat work and they own their own property. And that's where they put their time. And that way, when they walk into the stand and they've done their off season prep, they can just wait. They show up and the deer are already there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm going to just ask the simple question with that. What would you rather have, you personally? If you know you have to work, that whatever job it may be, what would you rather have? Would you rather have the time in the hunting season, or would you rather be able to put the time in into scouting and then not as much during the hunting season?
Scouting, more time scouting or more time hunting?
Basically, yes. Let's ask it that way.
Any expert, quote unquote expert, that the public land running gun guys look up to will tell you scouting's more important.
Okay.
They'll tell you, everybody's like, dude, I spend more time scouting. But there's a difference between scouting in March and scouting in season, because now you're looking at data that's more real time, I guess you would say. So, but they're also hunting while they scout. So I'm sitting here and I'm going to go, if I had to pick one, I wish I had more days in late October and the first 2 weeks in November or gun season or whatever it is. I'd rather pick more hunting days.
I think so too.
Because you can do both.
Yeah, I 100% agree on that, because I love the postseason scouting. I love the even summer scouting. All that stuff's great, but it's not the current data. It's not the current situation. I mean, deer fall by the wayside, crops change, you know, maybe there's a derecho or a tornado that comes through and wipes cornfields out or something, changes food sources. So there's a lot that changes there, but it was just a thought I had, like, you know, if a guy's really struggling with finding time, you know, where do you put your time? Where do you take your time off of work?
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea just to maybe invest that time into the fall itself instead of burning vacation time in the spring scouting. But when you said the expert, like public land hunters and stuff, it brought a question to my head that I was thinking about when I was shed hunting the other day. I stumbled upon this. It was like a thermal hub, and there had to have been 6 helium balloons in there. Okay. I mean, like, somebody had a birthday party in the woods and there was 6 helium balloons in there, and they were kind of scattered along this ledge, you know, but it was like, when I stood in there, I could feel like why a buck would bed there. Wasn't there a thing several years ago that used to be like, if you found a balloon, it was like a buck bedding area? Dan Infault said something about this.
Basically, where, you know, wherever you find balloons out, you know, people used to let them up. Now I think that might be illegal.
It's illegal. Yeah.
Yeah. So people would let balloons in the sky, and then they have to fall somewhere.
Right.
And wherever they fall, that's where you should hunt, because that's where a thermal hub is, or a buck bedding area or something. I have no idea, but that was kind of like a fun thing from, you know, the internet.
Yeah. I couldn't remember what it was, but all I remember was that there were 6 helium balloons in there, and I'm thinking, man, I'm a perch up, you know, over here, thinking this is going to be a great spot, but the odds of finding that many in one spot, I don't know, something fishy maybe.
Yeah. Lots to think about between now and next season. You know, obviously we're coming up on food plot season. I did drive by a farm that was for sale yesterday.
Okay.
And man, I know a lot of guys have these conversations internally with their family. One of my dreams, Jason, is to be a landowner. Mm-hmm. All right. I think it's 27 acres it was for, I don't have it up, but I'm going to pull it up real quick while I talk. It's 27 acres, I believe it is, for $168,000.
Yeah.
Okay. And let me pull 100 $162,000 for 24 acres. Okay.
Yep.
It's not much, man. I mean, what I mean by that, it's not much. I mean, it's a strip of timber along a road and along a creek. And now there's trail camera pictures in there that say that there are deer that come through it. I used to shed hunt the neighboring farm years and years and years ago. And there was always, you know, big deer in that area. How would a guy justify spending that type of money? An average Joe, let's talk from the aspects of an average Joe. And this is more of a social conversation, not necessarily a strategy conversation. My wife doesn't hunt.
Right.
She doesn't care about the things that I care about. Right. You know, we talk about going on vacations and we talk about spending money on a new bathroom or doing, you know, spending money on the kids' activities and stuff like that. And all of that takes away from the savings eventually, because this is kind of what I'm going through. Could I afford this property if I didn't have to do all the other stuff? I probably could. But I also am trying to make other people happy. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to make other people happy with their lives and their goals. And this might be like a deeper conversation than just hunting. But this is like the perfect beginner farm for me. I just don't see land ownership anywhere close in my future because of the way that our family is. I don't know any other way to put it.
Yeah. So my personal thing on that is 14 years ago, I approached my two brothers with buying 10 acres. Yeah. Lo and behold, we ended up having to buy 11 because we had to buy access to it. But that was enough money. Let's put it that way. That was enough money for three of us to afford. And we formed an LLC. We did it all legal wise. We have insurance on it, all the things, right?
Right.
We just paid it off last summer. So basically now our investment is there. And we have to maintain that investment by paying the LLC fees, the insurance, the taxes on it, and all that stuff. Now we can enjoy it, but everything that gets done there is divided by three of us,
right?
So if food plots get done, or if there's, hey, I want to rip out a row of trees, or if I want to put a food plot here, there's a question, you know, of like, okay, guys, are you cool with that? And then just so happens that only one of the one of the brothers does not hunt. He does not eat deer meat. He has no interest in any of it. He bought it just for the investment aspect.
Yeah.
Now fast forward a couple more years, 9 years ago, I bought the house I live in, and it was an older farmhouse, and there's 12 acres here, but only five or six of it is actual huntable, you know, the way it lays out with buildings. And it has a pond and everything. And so I took the happy medium, right? And like, I realized I'm not going to be able to afford another 10 to 20 acres of just farm or just hunting ground on my own. I'm going to have to live and sacrifice something here. So I live in the house. I know that this is not prime deer hunting, right? So I've had to develop it. And in the process of developing it, I've watched farmers take down fence rows and trees and kind of ruin property around me to where now it's kind of dismal. Yeah. So finding that little honey hole, dude, justifying that money, it is hard because I mean, we're putting this addition on the house and I'm thinking the same thing you are. Like I could take that $100,000 invested in some property too.
Yeah.
But what are realistic expectations? The property you just mentioned, it's $67.50 an acre. So are you doing this by yourself? Do you have silent private investors? Are you doing this as a group? You know, there's different things, aspects to look at.
Yeah. No, it would be, I mean, I just want to get into the land game, but I also want to accomplish a goal of having myself, I don't even give a shit about big bucks anymore. To be honest with you, when it comes to this, it would be in a decent neighborhood. I know that there's quality deer there in the area, maybe not on this 24 acres, but it just, I look at it and I go, this would be something to get into. The price per acre is okay, but like I could probably do it by myself, but then I would also like, and I hope your wife can't hear what I'm about to say.
No, she's at work.
Okay. All right. But the, I'm sure guys go through this. There's a lot of guys that go through this every year, and they know that they have to, like, their life just isn't hunting. It's just not all hunting, and they have to make other people happy. Right. So if I went through and made this purchase, let's say, and then I would have to be, I couldn't justify the vacations or some of the other stuff we spend our money on, which would affect other people in the family.
Right.
And that would cause a little bit of a rupture. You know what I mean? It would well, you got your farm. Why yeah. can't we have a vacation? Right. You know, like you got your thing. Why can't I have my thing? And I'm almost positive a lot of guys go through that. And
100%.
It's a dream of mine, but it's not everybody else's dream. And I don't make enough money for all of that to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like to just go out and blow money on a 24 acre farm, I can't do it quite yet. But yeah. I just keep saving away and saving away. And then maybe when I'm 75 years old, I'll be able to buy 10 acres hunt for 5 years, then die.
it's realistic, you know, it's like, you know, you spend 30 years on paying a mortgage, you know, yeah. and then it's like, okay, the mortgage is paid off and our vehicles are finally paid off, or, you yeah. know, you've traded the vehicles in every X amount of years or whatever, but you get to that point where you're quote unquote debt free. Yep. I'm 70. I'm going to go yep. buy my recreational ground. Odds are you're probably not. You're probably going to move yeah. a little bit further south. And I mean, at least that's how I see my life playing out, as I'm going to yeah. work until I die. And yeah. there's not a quote unquote retirement period, you know? Yeah. So for me to enjoy it, I need to enjoy it through the whole process right yeah. now.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So I guess we figure that out, right? We try to figure it out. We try to just keep looking at things and planning. And like this 24 acres, it would not be the best place in the world to right. do this, but like, cause it's got road frontage. It's off of a big, it's like, it just has a little bit of cover on it. There's deer that are on it. I don't know how many deer are on it during the hunting season, but either way, I'm trying to figure out a way to get in there and, like make something like this happen.
Yeah. And I mean, to that point too, you know, you say maybe it's not in the best area. You can make even a small piece just enticing right. enough just for the rut even, you know, yeah. It's like here at home in 9 years, I hadn't had a deer encounter, period. You know, I know yeah. the deer are there. They're nocturnal through my property. Well, this yeah. last fall, I had a really nice buck that was in there, you know, he's on camera, but we were playing cat and mouse and he was on one side and I was on the other side. And, you know, going back to the whole big buck topic too, though, with that,
yeah.
man, if a spike buck walks by, you know, I'm going to be entering my, what is this? The 9th, 10th fall of hunting here. He might be the biggest trophy I ever shoot, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. We'll figure it out. Hopefully someday we have, enough money or, to do something like that or to make a dream a reality. And I know, you know, you talk to people and they say the best time to own land was yesterday. The second best time is today. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so I get it. Prices go up. But that's not a realistic, and especially in today's economy, how much things cost, having kids, like I don't want to jeopardize my kids' no. Future or my relationship with my wife because I want to be a landowner. I understand the investment part of it, but it just, I don't know. It's a dream I have. It's something I want really bad. I could probably like make some financial adjustments to try to figure it out. But then I would be, I know, you know how it is being yeah. someone who makes their money. And it's, I have, since I've started doing this full time, the podcasting and the Sportsman's Empire, I have never made the same amount of money 2 years in a row. You know what I mean? Okay. Yeah. So what I mean by that is it fluctuates. Yeah. Some years I make more money. Some years I make less. Some year, you know, I could have a down year, but then I have an up year. And so it's never like my it's never a salary position of like $70,000 a year or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. I would say like for me, business wise, gross, I'm very consistent. My gross is very consistent. What changes from year to year is the amount of materials.
Yep.
So I mean, that changes the end game too. You know, when my taxes are done, it could be like, holy cow, that's it. You know, it's huge on some years. There's huge hits. And with what I do, there is a ton of extra expense with fuel and all that stuff.
Materials.
Yes. It's very expensive, you know. So to try to justify, like for me right now, to try to justify with my wife, hey, there's 10 acres or there's 20 acres down the road, man, that'd be very hard with six kids.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. 100%. 100%.
So
I don't know. It's just something I think about a lot. And, you know, you drive by it, it just seems so out of reach sometimes, those goals, especially in a state like Iowa, right? Where it's becoming harder and harder to find ground to hunt because everybody hunts deer. Everybody wants, you know, big bucks. Non-residents are coming in all the time. Private is overrun. Public land seems to be overrun during the best times of the year. And I don't know. I guess I just got to find ways to adapt.
Yeah. I mean, I think if, you know, if it's a dream, you know, you always make those dreams happen somehow, right? You adjust somehow. So if it's a property like this, you know, is there something that you can make some money on? Is there CRP? Right. Is there tillable? Is there timber harvest? Or, and I don't want to talk about like an outfitter type situation, but you know, for you, if you want to make this, hunt, or if this property is a dream for you, you could also say, hey, I know a couple non-residents that, hey, they're putting in points and I could charge them $500 or $1,000 to come hunt my farm this fall, you know, and make money that way too.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know, man. We'll see. It's so, you know, it's just one of those things I think about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great topic to think about because I mean, there is only so much land and there's only so much time.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And so I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens in the future. I am, I'm optimistically pessimistic.
So
I don't know what that means.
So is your glass half full or half empty?
It's half. That's what it is.
It's half. It's half.
It's half.
And it's your choice to fill it up.
Exactly. I got to figure that out. All right.
Maybe I'll just
buy more scratch off lottery tickets at the gas station.
Man, that's like a slippery slope in itself. You know, back in the construction days when I was paving roads and stuff, we'd always stop and get our coffee in the morning and I'd get the Illinois Lucky Day Lotto or I'd get the Mega Millions or whatever. And then I'd throw in a couple scratchers, you know, and then, you hit $20 on a scratcher and you think you just hit it. So then you just go blow that $20 on $20 more worth of scratch offs. I stopped, you know, when I started my own business, I pretty much stopped all that stuff cold turkey. And I changed so much of my lifestyle. Because I knew that the money coming in was my money. Like that, like that's it.
Yep. Yep. I feel you. So, what else do we need to talk about today before we shut it down? You got a crew coming in here pretty soon.
Yeah. Drywall guys. I don't know. It's the GC's on vacation, so we can't even expect too much, but there's a guy coming to do the interior patching. And right now, Dan, if I could take my camera and I could show you. So like to my right, there's a little walkway and then there's our kitchen. And so our kitchen's being opened up into like a mudroom area. And then off of that will be like our master bedroom and stuff. Well, the kitchen wall has been torn off the side of the house, right?
Okay.
So the whole addition's built, the whole outside is done of the house, the whole inside is drywalled, but the opening from the kitchen to the mudroom is that 1.5-inch foam board right now. And it has been this way for 2.5-3 weeks now.
Nice.
So it's just standing there, one solid wall. So our kitchen is like a third smaller than it was. And we can't even walk all the way around the island. We have to, like, there's only one way in, one way out. And we got seven of us moving in here. And then they haven't finished the HVAC. So, like, none of the heat is going in there. So we got these gigantic industrial electric heaters that are just sucking my electric bill right to the ground, you know?
Yeah.
And they're noisy, but.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm hoping the end is near, but the worst part of this is I'm doing all the finish work in there. So I'm doing the flooring, I'm doing the trim, I'm doing the doors, I'm doing all of that stuff, and I'm going to be starting work here in probably a week or two.
Yeah.
So
I had a buddy. Here's a story. I had a buddy. He had a full-time job as an electrician, and then him and his wife built a house. So he almost built the whole thing himself, right? He did the framework. He did the drywall. He was the electrician, so he knew how to do all of that stuff. He did, him and another guy did the plumbing, and then he did all the finishing stuff as well. And he's like, dude, I almost killed myself building that house. Like, having to go to, you know, work 8-10 hours a day and then come home and work 5-6 hours on a house, get 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and then, because his wife was pregnant with one of their kids at the time, and it was just a nightmare.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And he's like, I almost died building this house. So I think we'll end it here. Jason, I hope you don't die on this extension, this home extension.
I mean, I could elaborate more on this. So when I bought this house 9 years ago, this is a 150-year-old house. So I completely gutted it to the walls, to the studs and everything. And everything was updated, plumbing, electrical, HVAC. Yeah. And I did all that. So like I was working all day long and then coming out and working on the house till midnight, 2 o'clock. We owned another house. We rented an apartment. It was a catastrophe. And I literally did this in 6 months time to get us moved in, to sell another house and to make everything closure wise work.
Yeah.
And I did about kill myself. That was about 9 years ago. So this was, I'm going to hire a GC. I'm going to leave it up to you. And now we're approaching, we talked to him a year ago in March about doing this. So it was a year ago in March. So if we can, or April, I'm sorry. If we can make this happen before April, I can at least say, I guess I had a year of him doing it, not me.
Yeah. You just better be like, dude, I need a place to hang a turkey fan. So hurry the F up.
Yeah. It was exciting because I started getting the new podcast area like ironed out the other day. Like I took deer heads down and they're in the basement and everything. So the podcast thing will be in the basement now. And I think it'd be pretty cool, but time and money.
Yeah. Time and money. Yeah. That's how you kill big bucks, right? Time and money.
time and money. One thing I did want to hit on real quick, because we never talk about it, it seems like, is equipment. Guys, make sure you're checking your equipment. And man, I miss my bow. I don't know about you, but I miss my bow. I love shooting my bow, and I have not shot that thing since I shot my deer. So
no, same. Haven't pulled it back. I'm trying to think about getting a new bow this year. I say that every year, but I don't need it. So I have a pot. I'll tell you what, the next couple warm days I have, I'm going to be in my garage organizing shit. I just have piles of shit that need to be put away. So, all right, everybody, do us a huge favor. Go to Spotify or iTunes, wherever you download the How to Hunt Deer podcast. Give us a 5-star review. Leave a comment. Let everybody know that this is a good podcast to listen to. Also, we have, as soon as we get some more information about, or not more information, as soon as we get more video recorded, we're going to start putting more video up on the YouTube channel, the How to Hunt Deer YouTube channel. So go subscribe to that. I would appreciate it. Outside of that, good vibes, everybody. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.